Capital Investment Committee will come to order. There is quorum, and Representative Jergen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the minutes from the January 24th meeting.
All in favor of accepting the minutes as Representative Jergen stated and as printed, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted. First item on the agenda today is Representative Hansen and his report.
I have a slideshow.
A slideshow?
No, I don't. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And it was interesting looking through the post-2000 projects that are listed, because I think it tells a bit of a story pre-2000 as well. If you look in my district, there, I'd call it consecutive or cascading appropriations. So with what was called Port Crosby at the time, is a location off of Concord. If you've been in South St. Paul, there is a Concord Avenue, and there's an area kind of on the north end of the city near the Mississippi River where essentially much of the stockyards debris was dumped, actually about 80 acres of stockyards. So if you remember the stockyards and the packing houses, and they're two different things. The packing house buildings were pretty large brick-and-mortar buildings, and they were demolished. And in the 70s, they were dumped along with cars and buildings that used to be all along Concord Avenue, right next to the river. And so my predecessors, Representative Pugh and Senator Metzen, over the years got several appropriations. Sometimes the appropriations were flood mitigation. So there's an area called Simon's Ravine where at the base of that ravine there used to be some businesses and they would keep flooding out. So Simon's Ravine was restored in the 90s and those businesses were removed. And there was an open creek that essentially a ditch that went through this area where the stockyards were dumped. Starting, I think, in 98-99, there was an appropriation for a small bridge that went over a railroad. It's by Bugs' Bar, if any of you know where that is. and it was called a bridge to nowhere because all it did was go over the railroad. And then there was a cul-de-sac there. And it's a very narrow bridge. I think it may have been a $500,000 or $1 million. So then as we started to go into the the 2000s, I came in 2004, and we started working on getting a cap on the landfill, because if you went to this site and we were walking around, there were voids and holes, and actually some of those voids, if you were walking around, you could have fallen in and you would have found yourself next to a bar or rebar or concrete chunks from the stockyards. So there was a bonding appropriation for Port Crosby, I think, in 2005 that added on to the bridge, and that was capped, and that's where there are ball fields now. So there were truckloads after truckloads after truckloads of fill that were hauled in there, and that now has a dog park, ball fields, and a building named after Senator Metzen. And it's right next to the river. And it shows kind of that cascading $500,000 here, $1 million there, $2 million there, another $2 million. And again, money being put in by the city as well to match those dollars. So I would invite you, since we're close, to come to South St. Paul and go out to the dog park and the ball fields, and you can watch the barges tether up right next to that area. I think it shows that how we used to handle waste in our state and essentially across the country is we would dump things next to water, which was actually the worst possible place we could do it. And so I think we'll hear later today the consequences of just burying waste and not seeing it. I think we're going to have, both with the closed landfill program and the MLCAT program and a number of other other waste management challenges, as these legacies with a small L, Representative Lilly, it's the small L legacies that we're going to have huge costs dealing with. We didn't really know better at the time. People dumped them next to the river. And that was a site that took several decades to work on. We'll never be able to build on it because the voids are still underneath the cap. But at least it's a usable area and was cleaned up, and now people can use it. And there was an additional appropriation that came. I think the last one was for the Northern Urban Trail that went through and connected along the Mississippi. So often with suburban projects back in the day, they didn't get the big appropriation. They didn't get a convention center or an events center or any of those things. They had to make do with a $500,000 there, a million there, $500,000 there, to add up to complete the project. And I'm hopeful that in the future we can look at getting the job done for these projects rather than cascading them out over a series of years.
Thank you. That's a goal we can put on our list to try to address as we proceed. Second item on the agenda today is the House File 80. And in order to do that, Vice Chair Lee will preside.
So, members, we have House File 80 up for consideration today. It was referred to the Capital Investment Division by the Ways and Means Committee. I will preside while Chair Murphy moves to testify our table to present her bill. Chair Murphy, do you move that House File 80 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee?
I do, Mr. Chair.
Chair Murphy, please explain your bill.
House File 80 is a result of is before us today as a result of the last few hours of the last session, and a bill that came over from the Senate. And Ms. Dyson is going to give the background on the history of it, but. It was done in such a speedy way that we need corrections. And this is mainly a corrections bill, the funding bill, and a change conversion of bonds from appropriation bonds to GO bonds. Ms. Dyson?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, the House File 80 has two articles. Article 1 is the portion of the bill that would convert essentially the Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund appropriation bonding that funds the projects listed in Article 1 and changes it to general obligation bonding. That was an article of the 2018 Omnibus Capital Investment Bill, and basically speaks for itself. In the bill summary, there's an explanation of the difference between appropriation bonds and general obligation bonds. Then Article 2 contains both corrections to a couple of projects and also corrections to last year's bill due to technical problems because of the speed at which the bill had to be put together at the last minute. There were Article 3 of the 2018 law contain provisions that were negotiated on the last day, and rather than try and incorporate them into the part of the bill that had been completed, they were put into a separate article, and so there are some corrections that need to be made to that for it to work. And I don't know, Madam Chair, if you wanted me to explain any of those corrections or not. But
I think we have the document that you prepared for this committee from Minnesota House Research before here in our packets, and I think that explains the corrections well enough. In our previous meetings, we talked about the differences in the bonding, so we can go proceed with the people that want to give testimony because their agencies are affected the most.
Okay, so there are several people who will be testifying on your bill. I'd like to call first Jeff Freeman. So welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning. Excuse me. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jeff Freeman. I'm the Executive Director of the Public Facilities Authority. We are the state agency that provides financing to cities, local governments for water infrastructure projects. And I believe you have a handout in your packet with our logo at the top. This handout summarizes the appropriations that were made to PFA last session for three particular programs. The appropriations were divided between GO bonds and the Environmental Trust Fund bonds. The first program appropriation was for a state match for the to the federal dollars for our revolving loan funds. These are the programs or the loan programs that revolve and provide ongoing low interest loans to communities for a variety of water infrastructure projects. The appropriation was split between $14 million in GO bonds and $6 million in the Environmental Trust Fund bonds, which are not available at this time. Over the past 5 years, these programs have provided an average of $137 million per year to projects for low-interest financing for these important infrastructure projects. Because they're revolving funds, there's an ongoing stream of revenue, and our list is set for this year, so I don't have a list of specific cities this year that would be affected by the shortfall, but the problem is without the full funding, it will jeopardize our ability to get the federal dollars and keep the projects moving, so it would reduce our lending capacity in future years. The second program that we received funding for is the that heading should be Water Infrastructure Funding Program, the WIF grant program. The appropriation that we received was divided between GO bonds for the drinking water portion of the program. We received $25 million. The wastewater portion of the program was appropriated $14.6 million from the Environmental Trust Fund bonds that are not available. These are the WIF grants, provide grants based on affordability criteria for high-cost projects, typically go to small communities that have the highest cost per household. If these funds are not available, there will be a lot of cities that with high-priority projects that are currently working toward 2019 construction this summer that will not be able to proceed. The funding is needed for cities to continue to make the investments and move these projects through the funding process. Cities have already invested significant dollars to get their projects to the to this point, and they need to spend significant additional dollars of their own money to get the projects approved. We do not provide the grants and the loans until projects are actually ready to start construction. So the lack of funding is creating a significant concern for these cities that are lining up and getting ready for construction this summer. Finally, the third program, the Point Source Implementation Grant Program, PSIG grants. We received no money for this program from the GO bonds. $38.3 million was appropriated through the Environmental Trust Fund bonds. These are the grants up to $7 million to help cities upgrade treatment facilities to meet reduced discharge of specific pollutants to meet regulatory requirements. If the funds are not available this year, there are specifically seven projects that already have approved projects, grant needs of $23 million that are ready for construction right now, want to bid their projects, be ready to start in the spring, but are not able to proceed without these funds. In addition, we've got another 25 projects that have applied for an estimated $88 million in grant needs. Again, the ongoing grant funding is important to help projects continue to move through the funding process. The backside of the handout then shows the specifically for this PSIG program, the projects in priority order, starting with the projects that were approved and certified by Pollution Control Agency at the end of last fiscal year by June 30th of 2018. We fund projects in priority order, and so you can see we did have money from prior appropriations that allowed funding for the top three projects, and then there's the heavy dotted line. The projects below that dotted line currently are approved, ready to go, but we do not have funding for Marshall, Little Falls, Silver Bay, Austin, Columbia Heights, the Sur County, and Clearwater River Watershed District. Those projects specifically are not able to proceed without these funds. In addition, then, the 2019 applications in priority order, if that $38.3 million was available and projects were able to get approval, they're still working on the approvals for this fiscal year. If all of those were approved in priority order, you can see the other dotted line there where the funding would go. It's possible some of these would not get approval, and there may be other projects that do. So the 2019 projects are less certain, but certainly there's some high priority projects that we know are moving ahead and trying to get ready for construction. And again, the lack of funding prevents them from proceeding at this point. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
So, remember, Representative Erdahl, I have a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Freeman, certainly this committee in the past and presently recognizes the great importance of PFA funding. And the intent when we did this, the bill last year, was to give enough money to appropriate enough money to PFA to keep them busy through this next year. Keeping in mind that there are at least a couple more chances to get a bite at the bonding apple this year and next year. What does this meet the goal that we attempted of funding what you can do this next year?
Mr. Freeman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, the dollar amount, the requested dollar amount, as I recall from last year, was for this program was $62 million. The $38 million that was appropriated would have been enough to fully fund all of the 2018 projects, as I pointed out, and the top priority projects that are get approvals for are 2019. But as you can see, this list goes on to a second page. The total applications, $129 million, so over $100 million of applications beyond what the funding appropriation would allow for. So the need is significant. The projects take time to put together. As I said, we don't fund them until they're ready for construction. So, you know, cities that sometimes projects are delayed, and so we try to size our requests based on the understanding of trying to have funding ready for as many projects as possible that are that will be ready for construction. So the dollar amount was certainly good. It took us through all of the 2018 projects, or would if that money was available. But it will not cover all of the 2019 projects. So we'll certainly be back at hopefully some future point to request additional money.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Freeman, thank you for that answer. So again, your summary, basically, we covered 2018. We've done some of the major projects of 2019, but more funding will be needed to complete 2019 and go into the future. Thank you.
Yes. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Freeman. Congratulations on the positive legislative audit yesterday. I think I've sat through a lot of audits, and usually none are as glowing as that one. So good work on that.
Thank you.
During the audit, the auditor noted that in recent years there's been a trend towards earmarking PFA projects, and just looking at the appropriation here, I don't see any earmarks, that this is using the list based on need. Just wanted to get that. Is that correct?
Mr. Freeman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I don't have the exact numbers. There were a number of earmarks in the last general obligation bonding bill. I think that I believe the total was somewhere around $29 million. I don't have those numbers available, but I can get those for you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But Mr. Freeman, looking at the bill in front of us, I don't see any earmarks under the Public Facilities Authority. It looks like it's all merit-based. On page 5, the 5.13 state match for federal grants, 5.19 the program, 5.27, those all appear to be for the list as it is based on need. Is that correct?
Mr. Freeman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, that's correct. These funds are all for the programs and not for earmarked projects.
Thank you.
Up next, we have Robert Burns, Michael Schulte, and Elizabeth Waifel. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bob Burns. I'm mayor of the city of Marshall.
Proceed.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair and committee members. As I mentioned, my name is Bob Burns, mayor of the city of Marshall. This is my 27th year as serving as mayor, and I was on city council for 6 years prior to that, so I've seen a lot of growth and development in the city of Marshall. We have one of those projects that Mr. Freeman was describing, and this project is to allow us to meet our regulatory guidelines that go into effect in 2024. To reduce chlorides that are being discharged into the Redwood River. Currently, we have about 12,000 pounds of salt that goes into the river. That's not good for anyone, including people and including aquatic and including vegetation. So it's a good project. But it's an expensive project. It's a $10 million project. It is the $7 million in the PSIG. It was important to make this project financially feasible. We have a revenue in our water department of about $4 to $5 million, gross revenue right now. So the impact, if this had to be bore by the entire project, would quite honestly be impossible to pass that all on to the rate. So that's why this is a good program, and that's why we're looking forward to the passage of this bill so that we can proceed. As I mentioned, our project is designed, engineered, and ready to go for bid. In fact, it was designed, engineered, and ready to go for bid last year. And we've seen those costs increase from last year to this year. That was probably between $200,000 and $400,000, and we'll continue to see that increase the longer that the project is delayed. So I truly thank you for your work. Thank you for considering this bill, and I look forward to the legislature, this committee, and the legislature passing this important bill. I'm open for any questions, Mr. Chair.
Members, questions? Okay, can we have Michael Schulte, please? Please identify yourself for the committee, please.
Hi, I'm Michael Schulte, City Administrator for the City of Mountain Lake. I became the City Administrator last April. This project has been talked about and planned and going on for about almost 10 years now, so I'm coming into it near the end or near the start of hopefully construction very soon. So yeah, my city is also a member of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and we also want to move forward with an important wastewater project. Mountain Lake is located in southwest Minnesota, and yes, there is a small mountain nearby, and there is a lake. The mountain is a small hill as a part of the Cottonwood County Park System. Our wastewater treatment facility is aging and overloaded. When we rebuild it, we will be able to significantly decrease the amount of phosphorus flowing into Minnesota's waters. Our community is proud to play a role in protecting Minnesota's waters, but this project will cost close to $11.5 million. Our city of about 2,000 people cannot afford to do this project on our own. We are waiting for a $2.75 million grant so that we could proceed forward. We already raised our sewer and water rates the past few years, and we'll continue to do so, and we'll hopefully not have to go too far out to make it unaffordable, affecting a lot of low-income families and a lot of senior citizens that live in our community. I respectfully ask the legislator to act quickly. Mountain Lake and other Coalition of Greater Minnesota City members do not take a position on what types of bonds should be used to pay for these projects. We just simply want to move forward. In your packet is a column written by Little Falls Mayor Greg Zilka, another Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities member affected by the ongoing dispute. He makes it very clear that he and the other affected city officials, like myself and the city of Marshall, do not want to be at the heart of a constitutional lawsuit. We just want to move forward with these water projects. We support HF 80 because it will allow us to do that. We thank Representative Murphy and other legislators who have come forward with a solution to this funding crisis. We need to move forward and fund these projects. As Mayor Zilka says at the end of his column, doing nothing is not an option. We respectfully urge you to move this bill forward quickly so that our communities can move forward with their clean water projects. Again, I thank you for your time and all the work that each of you do, and open to any questions as well.
Thank you, Mr. Schulte.
Thank you.
Next up, Elizabeth Waifo. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Elizabeth Waifel, and I am work at Flaherty and Hood and do the environmental lobbying for the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. Both Marshall and Mountain Lake are members of that organization, along with about 95 other cities located throughout the state. We've mentioned at least four of them who are, you know, top on that priority list to receive point source implementation grant money, but there's others out there that are also affected either through the WIF program or who are a little bit further down on the list who are just ready and waiting to go, but we need to move forward on these top-level projects. The cost of, you know, doing these wastewater projects and water projects is not going to go down. It's only going to get more expensive. And it's really crucial to these cities that we are able to move forward. The coalition really appreciates the solution that Representative Murphy and others have come forward with this project. We appreciate the support we have received from the legislators like Representative Erdahl in the past and really hope that we can move forward expeditiously with this because these projects are very important to our cities and to all of Minnesota. Thank you.
Member questions? Thank you, Ms. Weifel. Up next, we got Kent Laxmo with the Minnesota DNR. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Kent Laxmo. I'm the Director of Capital Investment for DNR. And DNR's portion of this bill included some dollars for natural resources asset preservation and then three pass-through grants to local governments for various projects. The $3.4 million in natural resources asset preservation was part of the total appropriation for asset preservation in last year's bill. And our work plan to LCCMR was for one project to reconstruct the wastewater system at Itasca State Park, because we are in an agreement with PCA that we need to upgrade that to be compliant with existing standards. So that project is currently under design, and these dollars are needed for the construction, which is slated to be bid and commence this fall. So the earlier the dollars become available, the quicker this project can move forward. I'll stand for any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Lacasmo.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Greta Gauthier, Assistant Commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Morning, committee chairs and members. My name is Kirk Adelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And just to talk a little bit about WDE Landfill and the project that we have there, and I believe I handed out just a short presentation on the project. And because the committees have heard this project a number of times, I'm just going to quickly highlight what the project is and some of the changing circumstances with the project. First off, the closed landfill program was created because Superfund was not able to effectively deal with landfills and dumps. It created a situation where there were a lot of administrative and legal maneuvering, but not much cleanup. As a result, in 1994, the legislature created the closed landfill program. This is a groundbreaking program. That's the only one like it in the nation that allowed for these sites to be cleaned up. What essentially happened is the state took over the long-term responsibility and care of these landfills, since it was deemed that all the responsible parties for putting waste into the landfill was everyone in the state. It was a societal problem, so we came up with a solution that society would fix. On the first slide here, just a little bit about this landfill. This landfill does have a third of an acre which has a hazardous waste pit in it, which has a number of barrels that were put into the landfill in the early 70s. This is the only landfill in Minnesota like this in the closed landfill program that was specifically permitted for hazardous waste. We do have a number of concerns with it because of VOCs, heavy metals, and other solvents that were leaching from the landfill. And as a result, four different mitigation systems have been installed throughout the years, either by the owner-operators, EPA, or the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, to help control and mitigate the impacts. However, these are not long-term solutions. The best long-term solution here is to remove the waste, not only to remove the potential threat as we move forward. As we know with these types of landfills, they are the landfills that keep on giving bad news, because we learn more about what is contained in these landfills. We learn more about the health impacts and risks with various compounds. And so the long-term solution, the best long-term solution, is digging up these materials and bringing them in for proper disposal. Now, the systems in place are mitigating the impacts at this time, so we do not have concerns with the 20,000 residents that live within a mile of the area. And this is for a couple reasons. Number one is most of these residents are on city drinking water wells. The city drinking water well is far to the north and also much deeper than we see the contamination in the aquifer at this time. In addition, the homes that are around it that may have wells, we have surveyed those and do not see impacts. And actually, at this time, nature is helping us. The groundwater flow is from the landfill to Coon Creek and to the north from the homes to Coon Creek, so creating a barrier to some impact that doesn't allow the contamination to continue to move towards those other wells. The next one is just a picture. The first picture is what the facility looked like when it was accepting materials, and you can see the issues there with the barrels and some of them already starting tipping over and problems with the underlying structure. The second picture is one of our mitigation systems. That there is the asphalt that is coming up from a liner that was created and what these drums sat on. You can see it is deteriorating and is being sucked into our systems, which long-term will create problems as we have to continually monitor and maintain these systems to make sure they work effectively. The next slide just is a cross-section of the hazardous waste pit. And our initial plans were to go in, deal with the hazardous waste pit, and go to where there was a gravel, asphalt, clay liner that was put on the bottom of it. This is a pretty basic liner. This was before the modern lining systems that we have developed for hazardous waste and even mixed municipal solid waste systems, the trash we throw away every day. As we got in and started doing the investigation and complete the design work, we found that circled area, the soil under the pit, had many of the same characteristics of what was above where the liner was to be. To be able to have a long-term solution here, we needed to go down further to remove more of the materials to provide the remedy that we were looking for. As a result, on the next slide, you see where the agency and state has come before the legislature for three different sessions and were provided increments of funding from the general fund or from bonding. This summer, we moved forward with what we thought we had enough dollars to move forward with the project. We put out the project for bid. During that time, the lawsuit arose regarding the appropriation bonds. At that time, we were informed that we would not be moving forward, given that we were inability to sell the appropriation bonds. What the state did, MPCA and ADNIN, we worked since we were in the middle of the bidding process. We extended the bidding process to allow for time and move back schedules so that if there was a change with the appropriation bonds, there was still the opportunity potentially for work to be done yet this calendar year in 2019. We have opened up the bids shortly before Christmas, and we were surprised to find out the bids came in $4.3 million higher than what we had funds secured for, even with the appropriation bonds. And this really is driven by two factors. One is the site, the building. This entire dig will be inside a building that's constructed. We were looking at a prefab system. Working with a contractor, we no longer believe that would be the best remedy, and we would need a more permanent structure. And two, the cost for hauling and disposing of the waste properly were higher than we had projected with our earlier design contract. So the last slide here really then just is a quick review of the dollars and a reminder that overall this project needs $10.3 million to continue to move forward. And this really right now we're looking at to be able to start the work in this fall and early winter in 2019. We need to be able to let the contractor know by the end of February to move forward. If we have the dollars after May, then this cleanup will be pushed into 2020, whether it's the early part of 2020 or much like this calendar year this year, for the fall of 2020, early winter. That'll all depend on conversations that we have with the contractor once we start changing the specs in our schedule and time frames. We cannot have those conversations with the contractor until we have the dollars and can sign the contract with them and go in that negotiations. So that, Mr. Chair and committee members, I'll conclude my testimony, and if there's any questions, we'll be more than happy to be able to answer them.
Member questions? Representative Torkelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Cadalco, for being with us this morning. Could you give us some idea how this particular project ranks in PCA's I know you don't necessarily have a formal list of rankings, but how important is it that this project move forward as far as PCA's evaluation of the need in this particular site?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and committee members, the Closer Landfill Program ranks each of our sites based on risk. We do this by what we know of the various sites, modeling, and additional efforts. The WDE site is the number one site on our risk ranking as a result of the known concerns that we have with it, including the additional information we had when we opened up in 2017. Number one and two, number two is Freeway Landfill. There's a great gap between it and number three. So these are our most important projects for the Closed Landfill Program to move forward with.
Representative Torkelson?
That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where does Coon Creek go?
Mr. Chair and committee members, the Mississippi River.
Coon Creek directly goes into the Mississippi. Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kadelka, every time we open up one of these sites, things cost more. Should we be appropriating additional dollars as a contingency in case you have some surprises as this goes forward?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this project already has a 15% contingency built into it. That's higher than our standard 10% given the unusual circumstances we have found so far going into the project. So we do have that there. If the project were to move on and we have to change the schedule or requirements based on moving away from our current schedule, the bidder would have the opportunity to request additional dollars if they can show that is needed for the change in the specs that we first put out.
Representative Hanson. Other questions? Thank you, Commissioner. Next up, we have Brian Rice with Minneapolis Parks and Recreation Board and Bo Carlson with Three Rivers. Please identify yourself and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brian Rice with the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, and I'm here today on behalf of the Park Board as well as other Metro Area Park implementing agencies. As I testified before the committee, that's a group that consists of Minneapolis, St. Paul, Bloomington, Three Rivers Park, Carver, Scott, Anoka, Dakota, Ramsey, and Washington County. In the bill at the bottom of page 4, Representative Murphy's bill at the bottom of page 4, continuing on 5, is a $10 million appropriation to the Met Council. This was a bill that Representative Leon Lilly carried last year. I think it was 3181, and it was originally a $15 million request from the state for about 30 projects. What $10 million would do would be 21 projects throughout the metropolitan area in all of the counties and cities that I mentioned. The Met Council vets these projects very carefully. There's a formula for distribution that I think all the 10 agencies believe is fair and reasonable. The committee administrator has a list of those projects if the committee members need it. These projects are ready to go. They really went through the process last year, and they've been in the pipeline for even years before that. They've been vetted. The $10 million, if it's approved this year by the state, would be matched by $6,667,000 from the Met Council. And significantly, there's another $26 million in either other local government funds, federal money, or private donations. One of the reasons I'm here today is that part of that $26 million in other donations is a very significant $18 million private donation for a project in Representative Dean's district. And that's been in the works for years. So the project, that's called the Waterworks Project. So these projects are really ready to go. They've been vetted. They've been through your committee. The Park Board, I'm not speaking for the other agencies, would support the general fund approach. Like many of the other testifiers, waiting for the courts to resolve this issue is going to cost us time and money, even waiting till the end of the session. These are really projects that could have gone last year. I mean, if we, you heard PCA testify, the longer you wait, we're going to lose the construction season this year. I think our agency thought that if this was passed by the end of March, we could still try to get in the field with these projects yet this year. If you wait till May, we've lost the construction season. The cost of all these projects that I think as the committee is aware will continue to rise, and they're good balanced projects, and we would urge the committee's consideration as soon as humanly possible.
Members, questions?
Thanks for the opportunity to testify.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself. Proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. My name is Bo Carlson. I'm the superintendent of Three Rivers Park District, and we're one of 10 implementing agencies, as Mr. Rice mentioned. We represent suburban Hennepin County. We're one of the largest implementing agencies in the metro regional system. We encompass about 27,000 acres in suburban Hennepin County and manage about 25 parks and regional trails as well. I won't reiterate Mr. Rice's points. Those were all very valid points as to the improvements we're looking for the metro regional park system. I'll speak just specifically to our agency and the point that Mr. Rice made as far as these projects being ready to go and already approved by our local units of government. In the case of Three Rivers Park District, we receive about $4 million roughly in capital improvement dollars that would be matched as well by the Met Council. Those projects are already design ready. We have them ready to go. We're ready to get them out on the streets. So this is a matter of agencies essentially being able, once the money is approved, put them out for bid and ultimately get those construction projects going, which would mean ultimately jobs for many of our local businesses, small businesses. When we're looking at capital improvements and asset preservation, we're talking about pavement management, we're talking about water quality improvements. So there's a wide array of contractors and contracted work that we look for to help us in getting these projects accomplished. So we thank you. We thank you for the opportunity to hear this bill today, and we certainly support moving forward with this project.
Members, questions? Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Next up, we have Sarah Wolf with the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Wolf. I'm with the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, testifying in support of House File 80. We support the use of general obligation funds for these critical investments. The good government funding approach in House File 80 will save over $30 million in debt service over the life of these bonds, while keeping well within the debt capacity outlined previously by the Minnesota Management and Budget Office. House File 80 is also in keeping with the trust of the voters who constitutionally dedicated these funds for other purposes. For these reasons, we support House File 80. Thank you for your time today.
Questions? Thank you, Ms. Wolf. Next up, we have Craig Johnson with League of Minnesota Cities. Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Can be very brief. You've already heard from cities and from one of our partner groups, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. The League agrees. This is an important bill. We support House File 80. Do ask for your support on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Next up, we have Jim Pickinson with the City of Andover. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and you may proceed.
Jim Dickinson, City Administrator, City of Andover. Here today to support the A80 bill and the additional funding that is identified in there for the WDE closed landfill project. Again, this is we've been here for three sessions and had process going through it for three sessions. And after the last session, feeling we were fully funded, I kind of feel like Charlie Brown and Lucy in the football, and that we were there and then now we're not there. So we're right back here to get this full funding for this project. It had been identified that this does rank number one as the scoring for the MPCA's closed landfill program. What that report, previous reports from the MPCA also do state is that this landfill and the hazardous waste pit does pose significant risk to the human health and environment. So this is relative to many projects that you may see out there and the number of projects that you'll get to identify with today. They're all very good projects, but how many of them truly do affect the human health and the risk for that in addition to the environment? So with that, we really push that the partnerships that we have put together now with the MPCA, we're very thankful to be working with them. But we've also brought in the partnerships of the city and Anoka County through their environmental health and emergency management. Delaying the project will delay what we've got put into place. We have city resources. We have county resources from health and from an emergency response perspective to work with this contractor going forward. Delaying that another year and trying to re-queue those types of services that we've got readily available to deal with it over 2019 will create some additional burdens within our community. So with that, again, one thing that was also mentioned by the Assistant Commissioner Gadelka was the systems that are in place, yes, they are protecting the 20,000 residents within 1 mile of this location. As long as the systems work, that's our concern. These were never intended for long-term use. So with that, we wish that we get your support on this bill. I'd stand for questions.
Member questions? Thank you, Mr. Dickinson. Is there anyone else in the audience that would wish to testify? All right. So, members, there is an amendment labeled A2. Does everyone have a copy in front of you? If you don't, please let the pages know.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Murphy.
I also received a letter of support from the Isaac Walton League of Association of Minnesota, and they were strongly in favor of immediate passage of House File 80. I think the testifiers are the people that came forth today and told us their stories of proof that there is a great need and that there is an emergency hope that we can get this passed soon.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will move the A2 amendment, which increases the funding for the Andover contamination pit. The amount is increased by $4.3 million, making it a $10.3 million appropriation. It has already been testified to as to how important and critical a need this is, and I think it's commendable of Representative Murphy to be bringing this bill forward at this time and helping us to address this very important project.
So Representative Erdahl has moved the A2 amendment. Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevail. The amendment is adopted. Member, we now, Madam Chair.
I move that we pass House File 80 as amended and recommend it to the Ways and Means Committee.
So Chair Murphy renews her motion that House File 80 as amended be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Is there any further discussion? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And pursuant to an agreement with Chair Murphy and the Speaker, after this goes to Ways and Means, it will come back because this bill was not heard in the Environment Finance Committee. It will be heard in the Environment Finance Committee on Tuesday.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion does prevail. The bill is referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Thank you, members. We meet again on Thursday. This meeting is now.
Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair.
Before we do that, Representative Grassell can do his report. And then we'll be done with the committee reports. But we still have a couple from the audience that we will take up Thursday.
Okay. Representative Grasso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Brevity is our friend, so I'll be fleet so that we can get moving. The one project that I really caught my eye was the building of the hub for the Minnesota BCA in rural Minnesota, up in Bemidji, Minnesota. It was between 1998 and 2000 that it was put in place, and that aided in the rural department, sheriff's offices and police departments, with the force multiplier of having Minnesota BCA agents placed in that area to help with violent crime investigations, guns, gangs, etc., narcotics trafficking, and it with the research that is done there, analysis of evidence, it expedited the process when needed for court. So that was one project that affected my efficiency as a deputy sheriff up there. So it was a project that was well funded and well placed and appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Grasso.
Between 98 and 2000.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Grasso. Just so you know, the architecture firm I was working at worked on that project and had a little part in that project as well.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Ask him if he irrigated.
Again, thank you, members. We will be meeting again on Thursday, and now the meeting is adjourned.